Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller recording my second audio on Friday, the 16th of July, and I'm recording at 8:32 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, because it's Friday and this is my last audio of the week, it's the big picture long-term outlook for the four major asset classes that I cover in this service. And the first point I'll cover is the two main investment themes for the long term. These will be very familiar to all but the newest subscribers, but fortunately new subscribers are coming on board all the time, so I want to make sure I get these out early. In terms of stock markets, I've got three long-term choices: Asia, Asia, and Asia. And if I refine that, I undoubtedly prefer emerging Asia. If we want the developed market, it's really got to be Japan. But I don't like them all that much today because this is a tough period for stock markets right now, and it's likely to get worse before it gets significantly better. And while the dream remains that Japan and other Asian markets are going to uncouple from Wall Street, it remains just a dream. The reality is that it hasn't really happened very much or very often before, and I wouldn't be holding my breath in terms of any sort of major uncoupling. But we'll get big differences in terms of overall performance. For instance, in Christopher Wood's Greed and Fear comment, which he has, which I've posted today, he's repeated a long-term forecast that he eventually expects to see the S&P 500 index trade down at 500. Well, it's currently at 1,103, and it was only a very short while ago that a lot of mainstream firms, well, CLSA is a mainstream firm, but it's based out in headquarters out in Hong Kong, but was saying that the S&P was about to break up above the 1160 level on its way to 1300 this year. I didn't see it then, I don't see it now. And I do think that Christopher Wood's forecast will eventually be right, but it'll probably take a number of years, or could easily take a number of years before we actually get there. You know my view, I expect long-term valuations to be quite competitive with those that we actually saw back in 1981 and 1982 at the beginning of the last secular bull market. So I suspect that in this long-term secular bear that we find ourselves, that Wall Street valuations will eventually return to those levels, but it will take a number of years. Asia, on the other hand, as far as Japan's concerned, I maintain that the secular bear market low is on the 28th of April. Or was it, 28th of April. And I believe that as far as Japan is concerned, and as far as emerging Asia is concerned, that during the bearish phases, we will see the troughs occur higher than the previous troughs. In other words, as Wall Street moves down, quite possibly sideways to down, during the remainder of this year, and we'll get some certainly significant sell-offs in 2005 and 2006, I would not expect the Asian markets to uncouple, but I would expect their lows to be well above the lows that we saw back in 2002 and 2003, for instance. And equally, when we get the bullish phases, and we'll get plenty of those as well, but they'll tend to be more of a medium-term nature, which I define as sort of 6 months to a year and a bit at very best. And that would be quite rare. Think in terms of sort of six-month bull runs for the most part. Anything over 6 months, we're doing well. And the trap then becomes of being lulled into a false sense of complacency. But let me get back to the comparisons. When we get those, say, 6 to 9 month bull runs on Wall Street, I would expect the emerging Asian markets, and almost certainly Japan, to move up to new recovery highs for this cycle. Whereas I wouldn't be at all surprised if a number of the Western markets struggle to reach the highs that they have established for this year. Okay, secular bear trend on Wall Street. Now, moving on to government bond markets. Here we've got a rally underway, as you've no doubt seen, but I maintain that the secular bull market for government bonds ended in June of last year, and that this rally is a top extension rally. We'll get plenty of contra-trend rallies, and they will occur most likely when interest rates are falling, and when the and or when the stock market is falling, so we get the so-called flight to quality. But in my comment today, I described it as dubious quality. I mean, just think of all the debt that the Japanese government has and that the U.S. government has. Are they going to grow their way out from under all that debt? Well, a lot of the politicians say they will, but I think that that's not really all that realistic, and a lot of that debt's going to be inflated away over the next 10 to 20 to 30 years. It become more manageable as a result of that inflation. And at bottom line, as I've said before, we have to ask ourselves, if they need to borrow that much, do we really want to be lending to them? Sorry to sound miserly on that, but no, I want to be shorting the bonds when the technical conditions look right. The technical conditions do not look right for that right now. We're getting a good rip-roaring rally in the U.S. Treasury bonds today, up a point and a half as I speak, and that's not well. That's due in part because of the very nervous conditions that that we see in stock markets, where I'm still running some futures short positions, as you may recall. Now, sticking though with the longer-term theme, and moving on to the currency markets, here we don't get the big secular once-a-generation trends that we will certainly see in stock markets and in government bonds and in commodity markets. And we don't see those big generational trends for one very, very good reason, and that is that no country, not even the best of the best performing economies of the developed countries, can withstand a perpetually strong currency. So they chop interest rates down, they print more of the stuff or whatever is required to actually get the currency down, and they manage it. And therefore, we tend to get trends that usually run from, I would say, 2 to 3 or 4 years. Those are quite common. And anything over that is a bit exceptional, and you're really stretching it to get something that goes for 6 or 7 years. Now, and when you do, it'll be when we do see it, it'll be punctuated by lots and lots of reactions along the way. Now, my contention has been in recent months that the dollar's technical rally, such as it was a medium-term technical rally, not a huge rally, not all that inconsistent with some of its other rallies, but that it's occurred against a number of currencies, but it's occurred within the confines of its overall bearish trend, which I don't believe is over, although we've probably seen most of it for the next few years. Now, there are a lot of people who are talking about a major dollar collapse, and certainly gold bugs have been saying that, and but a number of other people have worried about it when they look at the deficits that exist in the US. And I don't buy that argument, not at all. One, because it would be ruinous for so many other countries, so it's a bit less likely to happen for that reason. But also, what would happen is that I mean, it would really be sort of a hyperinflationary type of environment that would cause that to happen. But because of and we've seen that in the distant past, as you know, and the not so distant past with some emerging market economies that were suffering from very, very poor governance. But for hyperinflation to occur in a developed economy, I just don't think we're ever going to see it again. And for one good reason. It's not that politicians can't be and completely incompetent and mismanage, but government bond markets will act as a restraint, and government bond markets are much, much more important than they were, say, 100 or even 50 years ago. And therefore, what would happen? If it looked as if people began, investors began to fear the hyperinflation story, started to discount prospect of hyperinflation, long-term government bond markets would go through the roof, forcing central banks to push up short-term interest rates to bring that inflation under control. So it's a good safety check to prevent the hyperinflation. But can we get a generation of inflation? Absolutely, we can. Of gradually rising, not in all a straight line, but in waves of appreciating inflation. And I've been writing a lot about that in the week, and of course I've mentioned it for at least a couple of years now, that we were in a new inflationary cycle, that we were not going to get the deflation that everybody feared. And you have to remember back in the last inflation cycle, and when inflation had peaked and was on the way down, and nobody called it better than the economist Roger Bootle, who I quote from time to time, UK economist. He actually produced a book entitled "Inflation is Dead," and of course, there were all sorts of derisory comments about that. Nobody believed it. And for years and years, we had governments and central banks preaching against and fighting inflation. And they went on savaging the carcass long after it was dead and set up the conditions for quite severe deflationary problems. And then, of course, we get all the money printing, putting us back into an inflationary cycle. Now, that takes me on to the next asset class, my second really big theme for the long term, Asia being the first one, of course, in terms of stock markets. And this, the second one, is of course the supply inelasticity trades, and that applies mainly to the minerals and things like oil. Also applies to very fine art, but I'm not going to digress into that field for this audio. Now, the most exciting investment opportunities overall, I believe, will be in this area, and it's going to be very much a roller coaster ride. As a matter of fact, we couldn't get a roller coaster that was as steep as the trends we will get in these supply and elasticity markets, because no one could stand the G forces on the way down or on the way up. So how do we actually play that? Well, most investors want to buy commodity shares, and they will have a pretty good run from time to time. But I actually prefer the raw material. Now, you think about it for a minute. You take something like metals, and you know I've had a lot of silver, although I've taken a lot of silver profits here recently. But I've been heavily into silver. I've traded it throughout. But for the last, at least the last 2 years, only playing it on the long side. And most people hear that and they say, well, I want to buy a silver share. Well, you think about the shares, and all kinds of things can go wrong with the shares. They can be badly managed, or they can suffer because the currency in the country they're in happens to appreciate. There's been a huge problem for gold shares recently, South African mines, Australian mines. And the currency's appreciated so much that it's hammered the operating profits for the mine. We get to, did I mention bad management? Well, if I mention it two or three times, it's not enough because I'm no doubt there's some wonderful mine managers out there, but it has a justifiable reputation as a cowboy industry. And if they're doing well, then of course governments move in on taxes, or the people who actually work the mines press understandably for a higher wages, which can eat into the profits. There are frequent accidents. It's a dangerous industry overall. There can be political coups. A lot of these mines are in just what are generally unstable areas. I could go on and on. Now, if those factors have any influence whatsoever on the actual metal, it'll push it higher, push the price higher. So let me have the commodity, thanks very much, unencumbered by all the people, all the baggage that goes along with the actual mining companies. The main exception to that, in my view, is at the very beginning of a secular bull run within the mining industry, and or a secular bull run for the commodity. And when we're in the very beginning stages of that, nobody will be looking at the commodity. That'll be controlled entirely by the trade, the producers and the consumers, in terms of the price action. And wise investors will go in and buy the shares, which will way outperform in the early years of the cycle. And of course, there are always exceptions as the bull run goes on, but these exceptions can be dangerous. And there'll be, for instance, new mines or discoveries, and there'll be all sorts of rumors that will occur in the bull run, and there'll be all sorts of flotations, and some of those will get spectacular rises, and a whole lot of them won't be around several years further down the road. So it's sort of the bubble mentality that'll bring plenty of little racy stories to the surface. But as I said before, give me the underlying commodity, supply inelasticity, and Asia. Those are my two big investment themes and are likely to remain so for some time. Have a wonderful weekend.